am back in our main sports studios today, where I am joined by a Mr. Ernest Swearing Swank. And just come right over here to the guest microphone, sir. Mr. Swearing Swank represents an organization he called Football Fans Against Violence. Would you just move on over to the guest microphone, sir, that we got set up in the studio here?
I would rather not.
Well, it makes it a little tough to hear you, sir, if you're going to, you know, stand way over on the other side of the studio.
I'm just not that comfortable being around microphones. Mm-hmm. I'd rather not. I just want to stay over here if I can, if you wouldn't mind.
Okay, well, all right. So tell us about your group. What is it again?
Football Fans Against Violence.
Football Fans
Against
Violence.
That's right, yeah.
You know, we could sure hear you better if you'd come up to the microphone, sir.
I'm just not that comfortable with that, if you don't mind.
Yeah.
I'd rather
All
stay
right.
here.
Well, then speak up as best you can.
All right.
Now, this group of yours,
yeah.
it sounds kind of odd because, after all, football is a violent sport.
Well, we don't think that it needs to be.
You don't?
No, we think players can have just as much fun without all the blocking and tackling.
But then that wouldn't be football, would it?
Well, it would be football, just not so rough.
Mm-hmm.
See?
Look, I appreciate your point of view. I mean, I really do. And I was happy to give you airtime, but
yeah.
This is nuts. I cannot interview you under this situation. Now, you please come up to the microphone, sir.
I am just not comfortable.
Yeah, you're not comfortable, I know.
I would rather stay over here.
Look, I have never done this in any interview situation before, but if you don't get your butt over to the microphone right now, on the count of three, I am coming over there and giving you a whooping.
Don't stoop to violence, Mr. Cashman.
One.
This is so typical of violent football mentality.
Two.
Think about what you're doing, Mr. Cashman, please.
Three. Okay, you asked for
it. No, please don't. Have you had enough, Mr. Cashman?
Yes, I have.
You want some more?
No, I don't.
Ladies and gentlemen, we interrupt our program of dance music to bring you a special bulletin from the Intercontinental Radio News.
It's time for Peculiar Podcast, hosted by Pat Cashman.
Gorgeous to look at.
And Lisa Foster.
She's dangerous. See,
you're on. Ready or not, it's Pat and Lisa.
Can you dig it?
Yeah, I can dig it, yeah.
It's love and time.
Okay, here we go. Let's do this thing.
All right.
How you doing?
All right. Me?
Good.
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Oh, man, I couldn't be better.
I know.
Optimistic, happy. Oh.
I have not felt this light in... I can't even tell you how long it's been since I felt this happy, this joyful,
great light. Great.
Yes.
Fantastic.
Yes.
All right. So... That's what.
Wait.
Yeah.
When I mean light, I mean high. I've been high for about the last 10. I've been on a pot high for about the last 10 days. Maybe that's why I'm so happy. I don't know. I've been on a bender. How about you?
Would it be okay with you if I got high right now?
I'm high right now, so you might as well join. Okay.
Let me do it. Here I go. Ooh, 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 ooh. That's as high as I can get.
Okay, time. Well, I'm higher than that, so.
All right, well, life goes on, and...
It certainly does, doesn't it?
Or maybe not. We'll find out. Here, this is all I'll say. And I've been trying to figure this out. Why do a majority of people want to follow this fellow who's just elected president? I think it is a human tendency to defy... Lisa, or to deify, I should say, not defy, but deify people. Like, you know, Bon Jovi rules.
Yeah.
Taylor Swift is my god. Right. I will watch anything that Timothy Chalamet is in.
Yeah.
Well, Trump is no different than pop culture. He is part of it, and that's the way people vote for things nowadays. It's a popularity contest. Or something like that.
I think it's easy to just try to. I'm actually I'm a little exhausted trying to understand it and figure it out, but it is a common thing we do when we just are stunned by something, like trying to make sense of it.
Yeah.
I think it's more than one thing. I think that's part of it, what you just said. I think the other part is that came around probably because this is a guy who is still standing. I mean, people are looking at him going, well, you know, he got... He had all these felonies. He survived that. He got accused of sexual assault. He survived that. He was impeached twice. He survived that. That's the guy we want up and run, you know, the guy that can survive all these setbacks.
Yeah.
That's the guy we want.
Makes
I mean,
sense.
It really does sort of play around a little bit with, and then other people say, no, I know what kind of a piece of crap he is, but we need change, so I'll take it any way I can get it. So they don't really. And then the other piece that I was realizing is in talking with friends is that some people just are misinformed. They are not clear on what they actually have now put in motion with this new administration. And it will come to bear sooner or later. And I mean, there's so many things to be furious about, but as you said, life goes on. Perhaps it won't be as bad as...
Now, that's about all we got to cling to.
It's about all we have to cling to.
They did a survey of people, at least one that I heard of, where they asked people, did not know that Joe Biden had dropped out.
Yes, exactly. You know,
I mean, that speaks to your uninformed thing.
Exactly.
But, Well, there you go. It's in a little bit of a way, it reminds me that the other thing that people like to do, and it's a human tendency again, is everybody wants to get aboard.
Board?
I was thinking of this movie I saw a long time ago, so I watched a scene from it again. It was called Payday. It's a silent film, Charlie Chaplin. And it's him trying to get aboard a streetcar.
Oh, on board. I thought you meant a board, like a fence board. I got it. You want to be on board. Got it.
And so he's trying to get onto the streetcar. Everybody's crowding in ahead of him. He misses it. Next streetcar comes, and the guy pulls a car up right in front of the streetcar, so he can't get around it in time, and he misses it. Finally, he gets on board, and he starts... sort of swimming his way across the top of people because he wants to get on, and then he wants to get to the front of the line. And he finally makes his way to the front of the line, and he gets pushed off the front of the streetcar. So it's a little bit analogous to life to me. It's like everybody wants to get ahead, and pretty soon you're making your way, and you're getting up to the front of the line, and then you get there, and new people are pushing you off. So it's kind of a cycle where... You know, everybody wants to succeed. Everybody wants to get to ride the horse in the direction it's going, you might say. And I think that's some of what happened here.
I agree. But I feel like it's not like pie. It's not like, well, if I give you this much pie, then I can't have this much pie. It doesn't work that way. Pie for everyone. It's not limited. Just because I give somebody else a little bit doesn't mean I've taken away from my own. I'm being too simplistic about my explanation on that, but I don't feel like it's pie. I don't.
I also think, and we won't need to discuss, because what do we know? Obviously, we don't know much at all.
I don't know anything.
But I think, I do think it really probably does come down to the economy when you get right down. I mean,
How much
a dozen eggs is going to cost me.
Yep.
When you know, people start talking in glowing fashion about existential threats and the democracy and character and all those kind of abstract ideas.
Exactly.
It just doesn't compute. It's just, my God, I don't know how I'm going to pay my rent.
And
somehow they think, these folks think that the panacea is this guy with the orange hair.
And because he said he was. That's the difference, is I think we got a little too, what you just said, broad in what the consequences or the benefits would be either way, when he was smart enough to go, hey, you don't like the price of eggs? I'm going to lower them. Hey, you don't like how high the rent is? I'm going to lower it. And nobody asked him how. That's the thing. Everybody just went, okay, great, I'm on. But nobody asked him how.
Well, nobody, there's a collective amnesia, too, about his preceding term that somehow escaped interest from a lot of people. January 6th, the stealing government documents thing, and trying to strong arm a Secretary of State to find him 11,000 plus votes. All of that. Yeah. None of that happened. To me, one of the most outrageous things was the way he handled COVID, getting up and doing these press conferences and ladling out all this bull to people, uninformed as it was. Nobody remembers that. They just forgot. I don't know. I can't explain.
I know. So we can sit here and spew all day, or we can just go get high and go, yep.
Yeah, let's do that. Let's do that.
Okay, man.
Okay, let me, I think last time on our last podcast, I talked a bit about Quincy Jones. He had kind of after the fact, because he died after we recorded, but before we released our podcast. So the only other thing I wanted to mention about Quincy Jones, who passed away, I think it was 91, wasn't he? Something like that.
Look it up.
He had a big, Seattle was a big part of his life. When he was a kid, I think he was born in Chicago, but his family moved out to the Northwest. His dad moved everybody to Bremerton in 1943 because his dad had a wartime job at the Naval Shipyard. And then when the war was over, they just moved the whole family to Seattle. And little Quincy went to Garfield High School. Yeah. And in fact, the Performing Arts Center at Garfield is named after him now. The Quincy Jones Performing Arts Center.
And after all was said and done, everybody would go to their individual jobs, you know, the nightclubs. And then we'd all convene at the Elks Club on Jackson. I remember that, because then everybody really played what they wanted to play. And that was after the after hour place. And mainly it was modern jazz.
When Quincy was 14, he met a kid named Ray Charles, who was 16, also in Seattle. And so a lot of people wouldn't be aware, but Seattle in that era of jazz music was one of the happening places in America. Just a lot of big jazz clubs were very, very ubiquitous in the
Georgia. Georgia. The whole day through.
Quincy Jones was part of that, and he always acknowledged it. He went back to Seattle many times. When they dedicated that Performing Arts Center, he came to that. And this is interesting. His brother, Lloyd Jones, was the longtime, I think almost 30 years, the head engineer at Como TV.
Oh.
Lloyd Jones was.
Wow.
And this is a bit apocryphal, but I have it on pretty good authority. They had Lloyd Jones found out that he had terminal illness. And so they had a gathering for him. It was at the Space Needle, I believe. And somewhere along the course of celebrating his years at the TV station and all the rest, he mentioned in front of all the gathered people there that he was the only black person that was working in the engineering department. He might even have mentioned at the time he was the only black person in the company for the most part. And as you can guess, it embarrassed the management there at Como that he would say that in front of everybody, but he was right. He was the sort of the discographer of his brother. He in other words, organized all the discography, the albums, the music, and chronicled all of that for Quincy. So that's all I know.
Yeah, and he was 91, by the way. I just looked it up.
It's funny because, not funny, haha, but a lot of these jazz musicians, they're all approximately the same age, and so they're starting to check out now. There's a guy named Roy Haynes who just died at the age of 99. They called him Snap Crackle because he had a ton of energy, and he was a drummer, and he recorded with everybody. Sarah Vaughan, Charlie Parker, Thelonious Monk, Stan Getz, Chick Corea, many others. And in 1960, he was named one of the best-dressed men in America by Esquire magazine. So he was a bit of a dandy, too. And Roy Haynes did some voiceovers as well. Mm. Pretty cool guy. Pretty accomplished. 99.
What is a well-dressed man? What constitutes a well-dressed man?
It's an aesthetic that maybe not everybody can agree on, but when you, it's like you know, the definition of pornography. It's hard to define, but when you see it, you know it. And I think part of it is not having a mustard stain on your lapel. That'd be a good starting spot.
So I just looked up, it's described as dapper. Yeah. Stylishly dressed in up-to-date, and up-to-date in manners. Oh. Oh, manners is a part of it. Well.
Okay, well, that lets me out. Damn it. I just bought this turtleneck, too.
A neatly, stylishly dressed man. Dapper. You're dapper on occasion. I've seen you dapper.
Yeah, I do dap a bit, yeah. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. How would I like to
I was
to
just
going to
say, how would you like to live to 99 years of age and you just say, I'm about to turn 100. Oh, didn't make it. 99 seems like a ripoff.
I'm not going to know, so... I mean, I'll know for 5 seconds.
You might.
And who says 100? Who said 100 isn't going to be the shit year? I mean, 99 might be as good as it gets.
I just visited a cousin of mine, a woman who is 99. She'll be 100 early in the coming year.
Wow.
But I don't know if she's delighted about that. You know, she's quite
delighted about what?
About you know, being that age. She's quite religious. I think for her, she just as soon move on to the next thing in her mind.
I'm ready to head on up, Lord.
Another jazz guy, 98-year-old Lou Donaldson. He played the alto sax. He was all about the blues, and he had an album in 1958 called Blues Walk that is regarded as a jazz masterwork. Here's a little of that. And then, also checking out, Linda LaFlame. And
Linda
I have a...
Linda LaFlame, what a great name.
That was her married name. She's 85. She co-wrote the song... Have you ever heard of the song White Bird by a group called the It's a Beautiful Day? Do you remember that? And it's kind of an anthem of psychedelic era, but it never cracked the top 100. And why is that? Because it was too long. It was 6 minutes long. And, you know, top 40 radio, you can't have a six-minute song.
Right. Until Stairway to Heaven came along.
The leaves blow across the long black road.
Well, I remember also Like a Rolling Stone was over 6 minutes long.
Oh, was it really?
Yeah, by
I didn't know that.
Bob Dylan.
Once upon a time, you dressed so fine, do the bumps of dime in your prime. Then you.
So the great, it's great for a disc jockey, you know. I sure could go to the bathroom. I know. I'll play White Bird here.
And she must fly.
Probably head out and go down to McDonald's and grab a snack too. Come back. With her husband, David LaFlame, I don't remember what her maiden name was, they recorded this, they met this music producer, and he said, you know what, I got a venue up in Seattle, Washington. Why don't you guys stay there and work on your music? So they did, but they lived, they said, in this cold, crummy house up on Capitol Hill, and they had no money, almost nothing to eat, but that's when they co-wrote the song White Bird. And then they did some other songs, one called Hot Summer Day.
Hot Summer Day, carry me along.
And this one called Girl with No Eyes.
Girl in my room had a face on the wall with no eyes.
And that just turned everything around for them. They were able to move out of that house in Seattle and had a fairly successful career as that group, It's a Beautiful Day.
Girl with no eyes, who can she be? The girl with no eyes, she's looking at me.
Yeah, she was, I think her maiden name, looks like it's Baker. Linda what? Baker LaFlame. So, hey, I just looked up, because it's curious to note how many people do live to be 100. It's not very many. Did you know that?
Well, it seems like it's increasingly more, but yeah, it's still pretty rare.
It is about 3 out of every 10,000 people
wow.
live to be 100 years
really?
Old.
Really? I thought it would yep. be more than that.
3.03%. Well, we're just talking about the U.S. population. I'm not talking. I think the people, there's lots of people way better than us that are living a lot longer than us.
Yeah.
So,
well,
but
Leonard,
yeah.
Leonard the giant tortoise is one.
So about one in every 5,000, I guess, one in every 5,000.
Mm. So
and just so you know, not to alarm you, sir.
Yeah.
But someone who's around, who's 100 or more years, guess how many, what the percentage is of that are women?
Mostly women, I would say.
85% are women.
Wow. Well, you know why?
Because we have no rights, and we're getting all our rights taken away. That's why.
Yes, and men just work hard. They're just worn out. They're just worn out. Women are able to sit back, their feet up, eating bonbons and frangos all day. It makes a difference.
Frangos.
Men are.
Jesus Christ.
I know a guy that would say something exactly like that mean it and mean it. Yes.
Yeah.
Forgive me, Delilah.
Couple other quickies. Jonathan Hayes, an actor, he was in a bunch of B movies, most notably Little Shop of Horrors.
Oh yeah,
the movie version, 1960.
Oh,
it was a Roger Corman movie. He played the part of Seymour. He was this guy like an assistant in this floral shop, and of course they had the plant there that just wanted to eat human flesh and kept saying, "Feed me."
Feed me.
Yeah. People
feed
love that.
Me.
Feed me. You can talk. I got a talking plant. Say it again.
Feed me.
Oh, boy. I never been to college and I ain't been around much. But I'd have been willing to bet there ain't no such thing as a talking plant.
And
a
Little Shop is also notable because it featured a young actor named Jack Nicholson as a masochistic dental patient. And finally, Elwood Edwards, the voice of America Online, voice of AOL.
Oh, yeah. You've got mail guy, yeah?
You've got mail.
Yeah, that's him. The Saturday Night Live people had a joke a couple of weeks ago that said, and his final words just as he died were,
goodbye.
Oh.
Yeah, tasteless, right? That's why I repeated it. Hey, did I ever tell you about the time when I was in grade school, there was this guy that was giving me a bad time all the time? He's kind of a bully.
Probably.
Probably,
but I want to hear it again.
And so I said, no, I don't think I ever told you this because I decided, you know what? I got to go beat that guy up.
Wait, you said you need to go beat, how old were you?
Well, I didn't need to beat him up. I needed to be able to defend myself. I don't know. I was probably 36, 37 years old. No, I was in grade school.
And, yeah, so what, 10 years old?
Yeah, something like that.
8, 10 years old. All right,
and,
so somebody's picking on you, and you're like, I'm not taking it anymore, damn it.
Well, just about that same time, I started becoming aware of these martial arts like judo and karate and stuff like that.
Hoo-yah! Oh,
yeah. And so I happened to be in a drugstore, and I saw a book that purported to teach you karate.
Hoo-wah!
I thought, this is great. I can learn karate from a book.
Yes.
I won't actually have to, you know, work out with anybody or get my head cracked open.
Right.
I can learn it, all the techniques, from a book.
Yes.
And then I'll have
Sounds
this
easy. Oh, that sounds easy.
Easy, exactly. And I'd have all of this ready to go the next time the guy came around to bother me.
And he wouldn't even know that you've read a book on karate. He just would be coming into your circle of doom unknowingly. Is this what you're thinking? Is this your plan?
That's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking of what is the easiest way for me to learn karate without actually having to try karate or judo or kung fu. In other words, it'd be just like having a gun, but I don't use it until I absolutely need it.
Right, but you've read up on it, so you know exactly how to use it when you do need it.
Yeah, and so I kind of made myself like I was part of a TV show, and then I went farther with it, and I imagined that a little old lady was getting pushed around by this guy, and I came and used my karate on him. And I got a medal from the city.
You're so adorable.
For heroism. All of this Walter Mitty stuff going on in my head.
Yes.
So I thought the best thing I can do is I'm going to try karate on one of my own brothers.
Oh.
Because I had four brothers. So who better to help me out with this?
And they probably deserved it at one point or another. So.
Oh, yeah. For sure. Yeah. Well, the one brother pretty much cold cocked me. After I made one little deft move, and then he just punched.
Ow!
Didn't work at all.
And you're like, wait a minute, I read a book.
Yeah, I read a book. Like, come on, this isn't what's supposed to happen.
He's like,
For me, it was all about performance, you know, that whole thing. God, and you got it, part of it from the movies, the Bruce Lee movies.
Ha!
Ho! Ha!
Yeah. No,
that's all I knew. I didn't know about the hitting part so much. It didn't
work. Did you try to break a board?
Yes, I did. I did. I did try to break a board.
And?
Well, I started small. You know those little balsa wood planes you could get when you were a kid? Really thin sheet of balsa wood.
Yeah.
I started with that.
You actually started above a matchstick. You should have started with a matchstick.
Yeah, so that seemed a little thick, though.
You know what, Pat? Those guys, though, they break bricks. They break bricks with their bare hands.
Yeah.
And the brick is in half. Do you think that that's real, or do you think that's like, is the brick already cracked and some guy's just holding it together? And then
I don't know if it's a parlor trick or a real thing, but I remember they used to say, because I think I was watching the Tonight Show or something, and the guy broke a brick, and Johnny said, how do you do that? He said, well, you got to look past the brick. You think the brick is just in the way, and you're actually going to want to get through the other side. Well, I got it backwards, and I thought in front of the brick all the time.
Yeah,
I did try it with a brick one time, but I wore three pairs of gloves to do it. I couldn't come close to breaking it. I almost broke my hand. That's all I got about that. But my lesson to people is you cannot learn karate or a foreign language entirely from a book. It's a good start, but you gotta do it something physical.
Or scuba diving. You can't buy a book on scuba diving.
Absolutely correct. Some things you just have to learn through YouTube.
Everybody was kung fu fighting. Those kids were fast as lightning.
So what have you been up to besides getting high all the time?
I have been hanging out with good friends. I'm really glad you and I chatted too. You were very kind. I don't want to get back into the election, but there was something very lonely about sort of not knowing what was happening, and I didn't want to.
Yeah.
I actually went to bed early that night, and I got up early, and I actually called you because I didn't know, and you were very kind, and you just gave it to me right between the eyes. So from that time moving forward, I've been just hanging out with friends, sort of trying to sort through things, figuring out next steps, a lot of self-care. Not a lot of getting high, like I said, but a little bit of getting high. So, not doing too much, trying to take it easy. And that's all. I haven't really done a whole lot.
You know, you can learn how to get high from a book.
One toke over the line, sweet Jesus. One toke over the line. Sitting downtown in a railway.
I learned how to get high from a boy. This is why you should not hang around boys. Boys are, they will lead you down some paths that, you know, and now who knows what boys are going to do now, now that they've got free license to do whatever they want. So,
well, everything I know about females, I get from film noir movies.
Yeah.
And in that case, it's not the boy. It's the girl. It's the woman.
Oh, really?
She is the protagonist. Yeah. She's the troublemaker.
That's why they call him the femme fatale. So yeah. She's tricky. She's sneaky. She's got ulterior motives. Yeah.
I killed Dietrichson. Me, Walter Neff, insurance agent, 35 years old, unmarried, no visible scars. Until a while ago, that is. Yeah, I killed him. I killed him for money and for a woman. It all began last May. I was thinking about that dame upstairs and the way she had looked at me. And I wanted to see her again, close, without that silly staircase between us.
It's always men that write those stories. Back in the day. It's only men that direct the movies.
Yeah, I know.
I can't stand it anymore. What if they do hang me?
They're not going to hang you, baby.
It's better than going on this way.
They're not going to hang you. Because you're going to do it and I'm going to help you.
Hey, I got to give a Rotary speech. You ever been to a Rotary Club meeting?
Oh, I joined the local. Well, actually, I take that back. I'm not a member, but I stalk them. So the local Lake Forest Park Rotary. And they're trying really hard. Are you a member? Because they're trying really hard to get me to join.
No,
and I'm
same
like,
thing here. No, I never joined. I didn't want
to. No, I never joined. But I do like going out and hanging out with them and getting high. It's really fun. That's really fun.
The Rotary Club? No.
But they do have little, I went to an auction that the Lake Forest Park Rotary put on. They're a fun group, the Lake Forest Park Rotary. I've gone to their little happy hours before. I'm just doing it for the social aspect, not the...
Well, that's really what they are, the social.
Well, no, they're not.
If I could shade a word.
No, they're not. They're a philanthropist group that...
Well, it's a service organization, I guess
right,
is what they
exactly.
call them.
Right, exactly. So they're, you know...
There are different ones. There's elks and eagles and moose. And then they used to have a thing called Ladies of the Moose. Like, yeah, we'll be in a club, but we ain't having no chicks in there.
Yeah.
They can go do their own thing. There's Shriners, you know, there's Freemasons. Right. Kiwanis Club.
But those are mostly men's clubs. The Rotary Club is nice. What I learned about it was I didn't realize there's a community built in around the world of, if you're a Rotary member, we got you. Something along those lines.
No, is that way. I've spoken to a million different Rotary Clubs. And
oh, you have?
Through the years, and they often will go in there, you know, they'll take care of old business, and then they'll at some point say, I just wanted to introduce a Rotary Club member. He's visiting us from Zambia, Larry Swanson. Larry, where are you there? Thanks for coming. Nice to see you.
Yeah.
But as nice as that all is, I'm just not a joiner. I never wanted to join a club. It always seems like then I didn't see you at the meeting last week. What's going on?
Oh, yeah, that's true.
The Elks Club, my dad was an Elks Club member, but then I read that they used to be a Caucasian-only club. So I said, well, I don't want to go there. So a friend and I, we were just out of college. We decided we were going to become members of the Eagles Club.
On the sixth day of February, 1898, at the old Moran Shipyard in Seattle, a small group of theatrical men founded an organization. They called it the Order of Good Things. In need of an emblem, they chose the American Bald Eagle. Thus, in April 1898, we became the Fraternal Order of Eagles, replete with charter. Perhaps you're a young married who likes to dance and socialize without paying a ransom. Join the Under 35 Club. Eagles are people helping people, meeting new challenges, forging new friendships, and continuing to live up to the slogan, Eagles are people helping people.
Why did we want to become a member?
Why did you want to become members of the Eagles Club, Pat?
It was because my friend and I heard that they had 60-cent drinks.
Oh, Pat!
At the Eagles Club. And I mean big, stiff drinks.
I'm in.
That's what we thought. And only later did I remember, oh, that's right, I really don't drink hard booze. But the idea of it was so cool. I said, beer must be about 10 cents if hard drinks are 60 cents. So,
but to join, it would cost you $12,000. So
I don't remember if there was a fee involved. But
There's always a fee. There's always a fee to join.
Yeah, you're probably right.
Yes.
But that's why we joined. That's why we decided to join. So we go there, and then you go through this weird initiation.
Oh,
it's almost quasi-religious in a way.
Oh,
and
God.
And the particular one we went to, we were in this big room, and each room had smaller rooms behind glass. It was like a bunch of different stations. So you'd go
this sounds really good.
This is hazy memory, but you'd go stand in. It was almost like if any Catholics are out there, it's almost like the stations of the cross, where you go from one station, Christ suffering on the cross, then the next station, he suffers from a spear being stuck in his side, or all the different stations. Well, it was like that. We would go from station to station, so you come up to this glass room with a glass window, I should say, and these curtains open from the inside, and there are some sort of symbolic representation of what it might be: courage, wealth. I don't even know what they all were, but I remember the last one. The very last one you go to, the curtain opens, and there is a coffin in there. They had a dummy in the coffin, and then the voiceover said something like, "Yes, even in death, you will still be an eagle."
Oh, my God.
And I remember we were looking at each other going, oh, my God, have we joined a cult here? What's the thing?
God, men are so dramatic. Like, when women join a club, we're like, hey, bring some wine, we're good. But men are like, they have to go through physical torture and hazing and just, what is with you guys? Why do you have to go through all of these things for a club initiation?
First of all, this you guys thing. Let's hold up on that a little bit. This wasn't my idea to create this weird vibe.
But I'm saying the majority of the weird vibes are created by you guys. I didn't say you
created
it. Not
me personally, no.
Yeah, but they're your brethren. So what is with it?
I wasn't thinking about that. I was thinking about those 60-cent drinks. That's all we were thinking about.
Oh, my God.
And then of course, at the end of all of that.
It serves you right. You should, because of your greed, you should have been indoctrinated in the worst possible way. They should have said, well, little mister, you want 60-cent drinks? You're going to have to take your pants off and walk through fire with a tiger on your head.
Well, that probably was coming next. But
that's probably what's coming next.
Because we decided... We got initiated and we never went back. Not a once.
You're such a wiener.
60-cent drinks. Who cares? I don't want to hang out with these weirdos. Or are we the weirdos? I don't know. But it's just something didn't sit well. And so we never
went.
So I guess my question was, and I don't know the answer to this, but I suppose you could find out. Are these still viable? Do people still join these service organizations? I know Rotary Clubs
are... Of course they do. Pat,
Moose Shriners?
Have you not been paying attention to what's going on in the country?
I guess not.
This is a man's world, and there's going to be Mooses and Elk Lodge, and what's the other one? The Shriners. Yes,
Eagles.
Moose International. Look right here. You want to go join the Moose Lodge? Here, I just looked it up.
Oh, I forgot about the Odd Fellows, too.
The Loyal Order of the Moose, founded back in 1888, and they have not changed their thinking or their laws since then. And furthermore, it was founded in Louisville, Kentucky. So there you go. Membership information, find a lodge or a chapter. You let me know. I will find out.
All I know is I don't know anybody any of my contemporaries, unless I've missed something, that belonged to any of those clubs except Rotary.
But I don't think that you swim around in the circles that those people who are in those lodges swim around in, if you get what I'm saying.
Well, I guess, but I, like I said, I don't, even casual acquaintances, I don't believe belong to any of those. I just wondered if they are still a thing or if they're moribund and they're going to disappear if they haven't already.
I don't think they are. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with them, but I just... It's just, again, another patriarchal institution that seems to be a little out of date. But have no fear. People love that stuff because...
So
that's exactly right. Which reminds me, I need to ask you a favor. I am not sure if I'm going to be allowed to buy a car next year. Would you mind co-signing for me on my car? Would you mind?
Well, I would have to see the car. We would have to get it checked out by a mechanic, make sure it hadn't been wrecked.
Yeah.
Are you going to buy a brand new car or a used car?
I don't know. That's
Have you ever owned a new car?
Yeah, no.
You've always been used?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's fine. You want something that's broke in.
I just am going to probably need some... help with financial. I have a feeling my financial independence will be stripped from me, where I will no longer be able to get a credit card, get a car. They probably won't even let me keep my house because, you know, I'm a childless woman. So
yeah,
just
right.
Was asking if you'd step up and help me. It doesn't sound like maybe you're that keen.
I couldn't help you with a car, I don't think, but I could help you pick out a cat.
No, I'm not asking you to help me pick it out. I'm asking you to co-sign.
Can I think about that? You know,
let me ask you, how old were you in the 70s? Were you around when your mom couldn't get her own credit card? Were you aware that she couldn't get her own credit card?
Well, credit cards weren't a big thing with my parents. I mean, at least when I was a little kid, it was a cash world. I don't remember when credit cards became the exchange of record.
Well, any credit, I guess I shouldn't say card.
Yeah.
Any credit would not be extended to a woman.
Well, I know my dad was an insurance agent. It was standard practice, I think, not just for him, but for most, that, well, I want to talk to the man of the house.
Right, exactly.
Same when buying a car, like you said.
Yeah.
If you, Patty, my wife, she's bought all of our cars since we've been married.
And really?
She goes in. She's a tough negotiator.
Yeah.
But she's run into that all the time. Well, are you married, ma'am? Where's your husband? We'd like to talk to him. And she has to push back against that all the time.
Yeah. Even nowadays, yeah, absolutely.
Even nowadays, yeah.
I think I told you about the time I went into a hardware store I needed to get a flapper for the toilet, the flappy thingy. You know what I'm talking about? That little rubber flapper.
I'm glad you didn't have to buy a ball cock.
The ball cock.
Yeah. Oh, that's one thing, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, the ball cock is one thing.
Yeah, I needed one of those but I was too embarrassed to ask for it.
I need a ball cock.
So I'll just decide. All right, I'll go look for myself. I don't want to ask anybody.
I know. Right this way, sir, behind the curtains back
there. By the way, this is a true story, but I won't use a real first name.
What?
But this guy is a wonderful guy, by the way. And his name was, let's say, Alphonse. He left a phone message for me, and he said, "Hey, Pat, this is Alphonse Cock. Give me a call. I'm here at that." He worked like for the financial firm or something like that.
Yeah.
So I call up, and the name was actually more common than Alphonse, but I'm using that for.
Okay.
So I call the place up, and let's just say Barrettson's financial group. Who do you want to speak to? And I didn't want to say the name. So I said, I'd like to speak to Alphonse, please. Which one? We have three Alphonses here. Again, it was more common name than Alphonse. And I go, well, what are the different ones?
Well, which ones do I have to choose from?
There's
that's so great.
There's Wilson, and Jenkins, and Cock. That's the one. And I'm a grown man and an adult, and I just didn't want to say his name.
I hear you. I had to do a voiceover for a prefab house company. How to, once you get all your little parts of your house, how to put it together. It was a very long project I had to do from, you know, but I got to the caulk, to the caulk chapter, and I had to keep saying over and over. So what you want to do is you want to take the caulk and fill in the window thingies and the spaces there, and caulk, 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 caulk. And they came back to me and said, you know, we think we want to change the word. And they wanted me to mispronounce it and call it caulk. And that's not how you say it. It's not caulk.
Well,
it's caulk.
It looks like it should be pronounced caulk.
It should be caulk. And, you know, so.
Well, I remember we did one of my very first Almost Live bits was called Plumber. The point of it was that the guy's a plumber, but we used big, you know, big action music in it, and he's jumping over a hedge, and we were way over dramatic. You know, some woman had her sink plugged up, and I come in there, and we got the music going, and we're making it into a drama when it's really just a quotidian effort to change somebody's plumbing.
This is Plumber, starring Rock DeBrieve as J.T. Plumber and Arnold Clambaugh as Billy Piper. Tonight's episode, Plunge into Fear.
We did an outtake where I fixed her sink now and I'm leaving. And I turn back to her, to the woman, who's obviously taken with me. And I said, well, ma'am, I gotta go. I got another job across town. She goes,
oh, okay, plumber. Sorry, I couldn't help noticing your caulk.
And I go, oh, that? Yes, that's actually an adhesive, ma'am. We use it to plug cracks in broken toilets and tubs.
She goes, oh, okay, well, you're telling me more than I wanted to know. See ya.
And that's the way the bit ended. But we didn't include that bit as part of the piece that went on the air. Because
do you think they would have let you? Do you think they would have let you put that on there back then?
Now, no question. It would have been fine. But back then, nobody told me not to. I just thought, I better not do this. First of all, I had, you know, radio show, and I didn't want to get, shall we say, too tawdry.
Well, you know, your thing is playing blues, so I don't know.
Nah, that's true. That's true. Yeah. Well, I had some other stuff I wanted to ask you about, but that can wait.
All right. Yeah.
It surely can wait, because
if I'm allowed to do the podcast, might need your permission.
I actually have an embarrassment of riches in the joke department today.
No.
But I'm only going to tell you one of them.
Okay.
Well, I'm going to tell you two of them.
No, don't do that. I don't like it when you do that.
Well, then I have to make this horrible choice. I figure I got a 50% chance of getting a good laugh if I tell two jokes, right?
Can you let me choose? Like, can you give me...
Okay, all right. Here, I'll let you choose. One joke has to do with a man who wakes up in a hospital after having a gangrenous leg amputated. And the doctor tells him there's good news and bad news. Okay, so that's the setup of that joke.
Okay, I might want to hear that one.
And then the other one I was thinking of was about a honeymoon couple staying at a really nice hotel in Washington, D.C. And because it's in D.C., the new wife is worried that the place might be bugged. So she asks her husband to search the room thoroughly.
I want the gangrene leg guy.
Okay. You don't want them both?
No.
Okay. Here's the gangrene one.
I want it because... I want you to save. You don't want to blow your whole wad at once. Just save it.
All right.
And that way you got a backup on a day when you're, you know.
Okay, I understand. I'm just putting all my eggs in this basket and I'm a little worried, but let's see what happens.
Okay.
Usually, you know, gangrene jokes don't go over that well. So
with me, they do.
Okay, here we go. If you're just joining us, you may have heard my earlier setup. A man wakes up in a hospital, and he had a gangrenous leg. His leg had gangrene, and he got it amputated. So when he wakes up...
Can I ask a question? Can we stop already?
Yeah, stop, please. By the way, I'm speaking to you now, we are about to get a... apparently about to get a gigantic winter snowstorm.
I heard about that. Yeah. They were predicting snow here in Seattle, for crying out loud.
Yeah, I know. I saw that. But down where I live, they're predicting 17 feet of snow.
Ow, just at your house?
Yeah, and all within an hour. So,
all right, well, we better do this before the power goes out. Okay, so my question is, he had a gangrenous leg, whatever, however you say that.
Yeah, you said it much
better. And he got it amputated.
Yes,
it's amputated. He got it amputated, but how was it to the knee, to the up to his butt, or is that not part of the story? Is that going to come later?
I think it's his entire leg, Lisa.
Okay.
The whole thing,
okay.
Right down from the hip all the way down.
Wow. Oh, my gosh.
I remember Stephen
Wright. He waited too long. I'm just saying.
I think Stephen Wright, the comedian, once said that he knew a guy who had an artificial leg but a real foot. But that's not this joke.
That's
okay?
Hilarious. Okay.
A man wakes up in a hospital. He had his leg amputated. You know that. And the doctor tells him, "Well, I've got good news and bad news for you." And the guy says, "How old are you, doctor? Should you still be practicing?" "I'm fine. I'm 43. Okay. Well, why don't you give me the bad news first, doctor?
All right. The bad news is that I'm afraid we have amputated...
I know, you've amputated my leg.
Yes, but the bad news is we amputated the wrong leg.
Oh, my God. The wrong leg? How could you do that to me? Good Lord, how could you get that wrong? Oh, my God. What's the good news?
Well, the good news is I think we're going to be able to save the other leg.
Wait. See,
this is what worried me.
This happened last time. I didn't, and then later when I listened back to it, I understood it.
Yeah.
I feel like I've been smoking too much weed lately. So help me out here.
Okay.
So we think we might be able to save the other leg, which is the gangrene leg.
Yeah. 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 That's the good news. He thinks he can save that leg.
Oh, so he would not have had to have lost any legs, is what you're saying. Or wait.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
I hate you.
Everybody was kung fu fighting. Those kicks were fast as lightning. In fact, it was a little bit frightening. But they fought with expert timing. Everybody was kung fu fighting. Those kicks were fast as lightning. In fact, it was a little bit frightening. But they fought with expert timing.
Thanks for listening to Peculiar Podcast.
Hey, goodbyes.
Join Pat and Lisa online at peculiarpodcast.com.
The gift that keeps on giving the whole year.
And on the Peculiar Podcast Facebook fan page.
Sweet.
On Twitter at Peculiar Podcast, at Mr. Pat Cashman, and at Foster Chick.
Join us and live in peace, or pursue your present course and face obliteration.